You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in rainy Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, although it feels like we are knee-deep in water at all times. Now, forgive me for the background noise today, episode 225. We are in Rebellion, here in the Candelaria, technically just outside of the Candelaria, but underneath the Intercontinental building, right off the Parque de los Periodistas. We're in a very cool, dark, kind of moody, I would say, almost like a speakeasy, and I like it, and I've never been here before, and I'm coming back. They've got jazz nights, they've got Latin jazz nights, whiskey tasting, and we're here with the owner of this bar, Victoria Mulganan, and a friend of mine too, Chris Morphus. And so, without further ado, let's just say, you know, welcome on Columbia Calling. First, Victoria, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us here in this awesome locale. Tell us a little bit about Rebellion.
Well, we are what we call a culto bar, and it's Rebellion. It's rebellion. Like rebellion with a V. Uh-huh. We created our own word. And we have a steampunk theme.
Steampunk. So,
yes, and okay. Maybe some of your listeners have heard of steampunk, but it came out of Burning Man. And it celebrates the Industrial Revolution, the 19th century.
Nice.
And what you see around you is a celebration of the literary tradition of Jules Verne, Walter Isaacs, and just basically taking into account that the humanity changed tremendously when steam became the engine of electricity. And so there was this appreciation for that in Burning Man that has manifested into an aesthetic that's used in Hollywood, and people have seen it around the world. So we're one of a few bars in the world or restaurants that have this aesthetic.
I like it. I mean, it really appeals to me. This is the kind of place I've been looking for years.
Oh, how
wonderful. I'm not lying. It's probably better that I didn't know about it, and now I do, because with the responsibility of being a husband and a parent, I can't come as much as I would like to. But for those of you who are interested, it's only, what, two blocks from the Gold Museum?
Exactly.
It's
one long block, we like to say, and we're one block from Candelaria. Yeah. We're also near Los Andes. Yeah. The top universities of Colombia are within walking distance. So all these people that have lived uptown and say that they just won't go downtown anymore, I'm like, really? You studied 5 to 8 years downtown, and this is your hood.
Well, that's as far south as it goes.
Yes. It's true. It's true.
Anyway, all right, well, thank you for that. It's excellent, and we wish you all the success with this place. It's
Thanks.
Amazing. And Chris is from Sacramento. He's a longtime listener. In fact, got in touch with me through LinkedIn many, many moons ago, and we went and had a beer, and, you know, a friendship has grown out of that, and he's an expert in alternative methods of transport. Is that what I would say?
Richard, it's great to be here. And yes, after many happy, successful years working in the California state capital, Sacramento, helping with laws and regulations to make walking, bicycling safer and to help clean the air, I've been down here in Bogota for 3+ years, initially as a midlife crisis exit strategy. But now in process is a full-blown reinvention as international expert on some of these policy matters, and it's really a great pleasure to join you today.
That's excellent. Midlife crisis. Mine came a lot earlier than yours.
Mine did too.
So you're going to outlive us by some distance. But anyway, we're here because it's interesting. I mean, you come from quite an interesting background, Chris, of course, in that sort of transport background. And, you know, Victoria, I believe you've got a background in USAID and, of course, business here. You've been here 13 years in Colombia. What we want to talk about on episode 225, Columbia Calling, is, of course, the imminent visit of number 45, President Donald J. Trump, to Colombia. Now, what I think is it will only be a matter of hours that he's here, but knowing Mr. Trump, President Trump's ability to stick his foot in it. What is he going to say when he's down here? What's he going to do in those short hours after the summit of the Americas taking place in Lima? I want to hear it from some U.S. citizens. I mean, residents in Colombia, but I want to hear your perspectives on this visit. I mean, let's put it into perspective. Colombia is, you know, the U.S.'s number one ally in the region. That's the truth of it. And we're next door to Venezuela, of course. All sorts of problems going on there. Colombia has been a recipient of much U.S. aid, billions and billions of dollars. Fortunately, that aid, I mean, fortunately, unfortunately, however you think about it, is to continue. It hasn't been slashed or macheted away yet, but promises by President Trump, of course, to cut international aid and make America great again. So what do we think he's going to say? I know he wants to revisit NAFTA, but that doesn't affect us. So let's plunge in, guys. Who wants to talk first?
My earliest political memory is of election night in November 1968. Mom let me stay up late to watch the Nixon-Humphrey returns. So it's this first crack at punditry has been a long time coming. In terms of the Trump visit, probably best to look at two halves to his visit. This is his first state visit to Latin America, and he'll be here in Colombia for a short bit, as you say, after spending some time at the Summit of the Americas, which is going to be over in Lima, Peru on April 13th and 14th. And so we're going to have to maybe take a look at how he might conduct himself in both those settings.
Yes. I think there's a reality to that. And of course, the Summit of the Americas have been thrown into some sort of turmoil with the resignation of Kaczynski down there in Peru. I mean, so what exactly are we expecting? I don't know what he's, you know, reinforcing his friendships in the region. Now, many moons ago, I went and attended the press conference here in the Palacio Nariño between Bush and Uribe, and they were both on their way out. So they didn't say anything interesting, and they didn't speak about Venezuela. They talked about Iraq. I mean, the both of them, who have nothing. I mean, come on.
I would expect Trump to be possibly a bit combative and out of place at the Summit of the Americas. He's going to want to raise the issue of Venezuela and present it as a bit of a threat to America's interest and beat his chest a little bit about what America and its allies might do. And I think that he's going to have some conflict with Latin American heads of state who are naturally quite reluctant to hear any American president talk of direct intervention in the affairs of a Latin American country.
Okay. And Victoria, I mean, as a business owner, I mean, do you hope for, a slashing of red tape to aid international investment into this area, or?
Indeed. But I don't know if Trump will be able to impact the horrific bureaucracies we have here locally in Colombia.
Yeah, this is true.
Of doing business. I had a real estate company in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
In the early 90s. So mid-90s, excuse me, 96 to 2003. So I know of Trump from a real estate point of view. Yeah, I knew of who he was. We represented some of his properties pre-apprentice.
Oh, wow.
When he was businessman. So my perspective is pretty unique in the sense that I just think it's interesting. He's, as a business person, my reaction to his behavior is not as appalled or surprised, because we negotiate all day long.
Yeah.
We all have purveyors, we have people we have to deal with.
Yeah.
There's tactics that all of us use in business that maybe people that aren't doing business every day aren't used to. So I think that, not that you asked, but I think that the reason why this guy got elected, there is a big portion of Americans that understand this kind of manner and that knows how to switch it on and off. And so with Colombia, I worked here in Colombia with the U.S. Embassy and USAID. I was the public-private partnership specialist. And I worked for AmCham, which is a Chamber of Commerce, Colombian American Chamber of Commerce. And I would say that the business people here are, you know, they take their time in analyzing. They're not as quick to jump on a bandwagon until they see exactly if their sector is going to be affected or not.
Yeah.
As we know, and as you said, like, Colombia is a huge ally. I went to Washington a couple of times for the U.S. Embassy here, and I was amazed at the bilateral. I'm independent, by the way. By the bilateral love, yeah. love for Colombia. And that's doesn't seem to me to be changing. Now it was Plan Colombia, now it's going to be Plan Peace or whatever. But it's really positive to be living here when there is this, I think, positive desire on the conservative side and on the liberal side to help in different areas. So that you, I think that that's positive. I think he's here for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
So and I think he's got 2 visits near us.
Oh, really?
The advanced team had their lunch here.
Oh, nice.
About 3 weeks ago on a Saturday.
So basically, he might well be coming to this.
Well, we hope so. I mean, it is the president of the United States, and I, like I said, I'm independent. But that's business, and that's pretty interesting.
It's the most
and it's the most powerful man in the world, and I don't have a feeling either way. I didn't vote. But I do think it's not as bad as people think it might be. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're fortunate and that Colombia is a strong ally of Washington on both sides. And that force of lobbying, et cetera, will continue the funding coming here.
Now, I want to raise something, just draw back to a comment that you made previously. You had a real estate company in Manhattan in the 80s.
No, not 90s, the 80s.
90s.
Look at me. God.
Sorry, I associate Trump with the 80s, you see. I just think he's just the most iconic 1980s symbol.
No, yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
So are you on the long list of women that he's jumped?
No.
Okay, good. We needed to get that out. That's okay. You're not on the list. Perfect. Interesting points, definitely, on that. I mean, we've had Rex Tillerson down here. We've had Mike Pence down here well. So they've been advanced parties in a way.
Yeah.
No, so you've had the advanced party, but there's been no scandal, no Secret Service scandal down here in Rebellion?
No, thank God, no. And, you know, the thing about that Secret Service scandal, if your listeners don't know, like, prostitution is legal in Colombia.
Yeah.
The issue was that the guy didn't want to pay her.
Yeah,
that and you know, like that I just think is interesting for
it's a nice
people
anecdote.
To understand.
Two anecdotes.
It is.
So I had my wedding in Cartagena, and my stag evening was very not dissimilar to some of the locations, although not as extreme. And also, secondly, a good friend of mine was in Semana magazine, or was it Soho magazine, with that girl when they did a mock-up of the Secret Service. He was a Secret Service agent in the photograph, and he had to change in a room with her. She's like, no, mijito, come in here.
It's, oh, wow.
Space. They're still on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
I think she's in Dubai.
Danya, like that. Yeah.
But anyway, these are all neither here nor there. They're everywhere. But, I don't know. We've got this meeting down there, and I think he's going to ruffle some feathers in Lima. I think his raison d'etre for going to Lima is to ruffle some feathers. You know, he's been in power a year. But, as you say, Colombia is a huge ally, regardless, and especially with what's going on in Venezuela and the great big game that's being played out there for the dominance, let's say, geopolitical dominance, Russia, China, and so on. The U.S. needs this ally. I mean, what do we expect him to do? Do we expect him to just hug Santos and say, you've done a great job, really, really tremendous?
Well, if we think of the Colombia-U.S. relationship as perhaps having three dimensions, one of which Victoria alludes to, which is trade. And so that's a win-win in which both Trump and Santos are going to want to try to find some continued rapprochement. Then you've got other dimensions of the relationship include drugs and broader security issues.
Yeah.
And both those are very interesting in terms of how Trump might approach Santos. I mean, Trump will come to Colombia playing a very strong hand.
Yes.
Richard, as you're aware, your home country, United Kingdom, is tied at the race to the USA, and Colombia is even more tied and perhaps plays an even weaker hand than the UK plays in terms of that bilateral relationship. And so Trump will know that coming here. And I think what you can see, what you're definitely going to see, one thing you'll definitely see here is just a show of force, of personality, of strength on the part of Trump. I mean, Santos is definitely going to have to kiss the ring in a couple of ways here, because he's, you know, Trump had proposed significantly cutting aid by more than 50% to Colombia before Congress nixed that.
but Trump is going to come here with that money, you know, knowing that money is going to flow, but he's clearly going to state, for example, that it's not unconditional, that he's going to want to see continued progress on the drug trade and some other matters. The drug angle is interesting. Trump is a teetotaler. He doesn't behave as one necessarily, but he doesn't drink and is strongly anti-drug. One of his most odd alliances is with the Filipino leader Duterte, you know, the autocrat whose yeah. goons are publicly killing drug dealers in the streets of Manila, and Trump is showing support for him. And so I would expect him to come here making very strong statements about the need for Colombia to make progress on the reduction in the growth of coca. And if I were Santos, well, let's say this, if I were a drug dealer in Colombia, I'd be laying very, very low for the next week, because I think it is in Santos's interest to have a scalp for Trump. I would expect to see a very high-level arrest of a drug kingpin, or some sort of intervention, some sort of announcement of a discovery of many, many kilos of cocaine in advance of Trump's arrival, because that would make Colombia look much better in Trump's eyes.
Very true. I think you're right on the money in that one, in terms of eradication, in terms of the drug deals and so on. Victoria, do you have anything to say about eradication?
Sure. I mean, I disagree on a couple things, in that Santos is going out, right?
Yeah,
he's gone.
He's gone
in June. I know when I worked at the embassy that there were things that Santos did not want implemented here, but because of how bureaucracy works, the funding came through, and from USAID. And so Colombia is not a poor country. It's a middle-income country. It should not be receiving aid from USAID. I was always told to work myself out of my job, and I took that seriously in public-private partnerships. Like, I believed that cornball shit. But really, nobody really wanted that. So there's an interest in certain people wanting to keep it going on here. I think it's positive, because I love that America loves Colombia. I love Colombia, so I love that. But I don't know if it's necessary. I don't know if the new government that comes in is going to care particularly too much. I don't know. I've been a little close to it, and I don't know how important. I don't know. I think there's a new reality. The last summit before the scandal, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I was working at the embassy at that time. We were all really excited because Santos was going to announce that Plan Colombia didn't work, and that we should legalize drugs, or it's like there should be a modicum, there should be a transition to decriminalization, or like, let's look at things, this maybe didn't work, but in a soft way. Like, yeah. And so everybody was waiting for that statement to come out, and then the Secret Service prostitute thing happened, and he didn't even get up and talk. So this government's not so interested in kissing the ring, at least wasn't. Got the Nobel Peace Prize, wants peace to go well, wants us to win the World Cup. But I don't know if he's going to, I don't know, I think it's going to be interesting. You're probably right, I'm just throwing out a different point of view.
I think that's fascinating, and Santos had been bandying around that idea at the UN and other places. He'd been in Europe, he'd been talking about it. Of course, in Europe, he's received by a bit more of a, let's say, an open mind to this. We don't want, not full legalization, but this conversation needs to begin. And a couple of things I wanted to bring up there is, like, he comes, President Trump is coming before the elections. Is anyone going to want to be tarred by the brush of being, associated with President Trump? Could it draw away from their electorate? I mean, I don't think that Vargas Lleras at this very moment is in a particularly strong position, but he's someone who would look for the Trump blessing, by all means. Maybe Duque as well, with the Uribista camp. I don't know. The other side, of course, wouldn't want to be, but it's the U.S. The U.S. is not going anywhere. It's
right.
The ally.
Right.
We need this ally.
Right.
I want to bring that up there. So have a think about that as I rattle on. And I also think, as you said, Trump's a teetotaler. He doesn't drink, doesn't do drugs or anything like that. But he gets his fix in other ways. I mean, I think it's power and just talking. I think, or it's KFC and McDonald's, isn't it? But what I find interesting about his massive anti-drug stance, and I'm anti-drugs and stuff, but I believe in the conversation about a legalization. I think, I just don't think that we can continue the way we're going. But he has this belief that we stop growing it, people will stop consuming. the biggest problem in the U.S. right now isn't, of course, through cocaine, it's through opioids, or at least that's what we're reading about. And we're not providing those from Colombia. I mean, Colombia obviously is a generator of a huge amount of problems, unless we don't deny it on any level. But with the money engaged in this industry, how can you stop? I mean, when you can't substitute coffee for it or cacao or anything. It doesn't make up the shortfall in people's income. So I don't know. Anyone who wants to jump in with further comments about this?
I just wanted to say that I hope Victoria is right. If Santos were to confront Trump and you know, begin to propose a new relationship between the states and Colombia via some changes to drug policy within Colombia, that would be the far more interesting scenario for this visit. So that would be quite interesting. Trump has a 16% approval rating in Latin America, which makes him perhaps the only politician less popular in Colombia than our besieged mayor.
Or Santos. Oh, wait, is he Santos? Is what, 18? So it's about around there.
You guys believe the polls?
No, not at all. Not at all. I can't at the moment believe the polls.
And I think your comment about Duque, you know, he's Uribe's pawn. Yeah. So, of course, if he goes, I mean, far beyond Vargas Lleras.
Yeah.
Far beyond Vargas Lleras, Duque is somebody who would see it as a benefit to meet with Trump. These are warmonger people. I think Duque is much more sound than Uribe. We'll see if he has that independent voice. But I think the alignment would be, you know, I don't know. I think you have to give a little more credit to Donald Trump's team or even his sense of things. I know that he's done business all over the world, and I feel like people forget that too. It may be very gauche and uncomfortable how he speaks, and we're all listening to every word he says and all ready to laugh and talk about what the buffoon he is. But the guy's done business all over the world. So he's been able to get in rooms with some pretty freaking powerful people all over the world and make $1 million or $1 billion contracts go through, or build a hotel in a weird country, or build a casino. Let me tell you, I have a little teeny restaurant, and it's hard. And you have a hotel.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
And so there is something to keeping a little hope that these meetings at the summit, that it's give a little credit. The guy's been around. The guy's has some international experience, and I would say much more international experience than a lot of former presidents in a real, real way, and looking in people's eyes and making real deals. And I think having worked in bureaucracy after having been a private sector person and seeing bureaucracy up close in the U.S. government and with the Colombian government, we come from a different perspective when you're a small business person.
Neither Trump nor Santos really has a reason to want to see this meeting go south. Both, I think, stand to benefit from a win-win. Hey, Victoria's right as well that of the major Colombian presidential candidates, perhaps Duque is most in need of looking presidential and establishing himself as his own man out of the shadow of his sponsor, Senator Uribe, and a photo op with the President of the United States might help him do that. It might carry benefits that would outweigh the risk.
I remain on the bench that I need to be convinced that Duque can be his own man.
I really
don't think so, because every time he's opened his mouth trying to do his own thing, he's put his foot in it as well. But my feeling, winding this down, but my feeling is that, and I have this sort of ripples beneath the surface in my very being, is I need Colombia to come out of this looking good. Whether it means, I don't want Trump to be embarrassed, because he'll take everyone else down with him if he gets embarrassed. But when we had that summit in Cartagena and there was a scandal, Santos couldn't talk, like you said, Victoria. Yeah. Santos couldn't talk, couldn't do what he needed to do, couldn't speak about what needed to be spoken about.
Right.
Colombia came out losing. You know, it was a place that then came out, again, fully justified, sexual tourism and everything else that comes with it, everything else which needs to be addressed, of course, in Colombia. If you want to change your image, you need to do other things. That's for another podcast. But at the same time, I just need Colombia to come out looking good, having done well. I don't want an Allende moment. Please don't let there be any assassination attempts. Please don't let them do anything like this. I just want, just you know, that on the international stage and for those that grassroots, almost Trump supporter, that Colombia doesn't just represent narcos and, you know, whatever else is out there in Scarface and et cetera. I just, you know, it just helps change that image if it comes off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an opportunity for Trump to look presidential and to look like a normal president, which has been a challenge for him. And Santos should be more than willing to allow him to do that as if the money keeps flowing. Really, the risk here is, as you know, some sort of black swan event, whether it's American mid-level staffers on the loose having a bit too much fun, or the ELN decides to make one of its occasional statements, etc.
It's true. There's an absolute truth behind that. So if they come into your bar, I expect it to be a closed bar and a private event, and no cameras. Take everybody's phone as they come in. No, we don't need a picture of Trump dancing like Hillary in Bar Havana in Cartagena.
I don't know. I think it's... I think another thing they have to remember as well is we had a paramilitary president.
Yes, we
okay.
Did.
Like Colombia is not it's not unusual for Colombians to have big characters with big pasts and current lives that are appalling. And so I think the Colombian and probably Latinos in general are pretty open with who we have next door in Venezuela. Like I don't Trump's fine in that crowd. You know, I hope he's probably better than a lot of the people in certain ways, and not harming his own citizenry. So if we could leave it at that. But I wanted to say that in the bar, we've seen such a beautiful, wonderful increase from year to year. Mm. And your concern about the image of Colombia, all I know is it's so positive. Yeah. People that come in here and they're here one night in Bogota and they're like, I love this country. The people are so great. It's a 20% increase in tourism. It's 28% if you include Venezuelan. So, I mean, it's a real 20% from year to year. And they expected 6% with the peace process. It's 20%. So we've learned from clients that a lot of that does, unfortunately, or fortunately, have to do with narcos. Mm. And... I've only seen a couple episodes. Yeah, I can't stand the accent. My kids were born in Medellin, so I know the accent, which I don't necessarily love. But the fact is that the accent is Brazilian. And it's
you were in Narcos. Sorry.
At the tail end of episode 9, season 3, you'll see me in a meeting
Chris
between
Morvin.
The DEA agent and the U.S. ambassador to Colombia. But, you know, so Victoria mentions at the restaurant level that things are improving here. And I think it's very much in Trump's interest just to have a smooth visit in which he kind of puts a seal of approval on Colombia's progress, both in terms of the fighting drugs and in terms of Colombia as a trade and security partner for the United States. I really think it's in both his interest and that of Santos to make that happen. And outside of some outside party making a mess of things, that's the way it probably will go.
Yeah, this is true. Awesome statements. Excellent conversation. So final point, because we are talking about President Trump's visit to Colombia. Do we think that there is going to be any meddling by people like Cambridge Analytica in the Colombian elections linked to maybe Russian links and so on and so forth? Mm-hmm. Because, of course, that's the big debate in the U.S. at the moment. Do we think that there's any knockback here for, part of this big, great big global game?
Well, we had it in the last election.
Yeah, with Andrés Sepúlveda, the hacker.
But yes, whatever happened.
He's in the bunker still.
Okay, good. Good. But there was also just recently when Uribe was running for senator. Was it that? And there was Facebook. Like it was pre the American Facebook thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the candidate came out when the no vote won.
Yeah.
The guy, Velez, the senator in Medellin, came out and said, yes, we lied 100% on Facebook. That was
in Carlos Velez Uribe, who I've met.
Yes. I know him too, yeah.
Yeah, he's the Uribe village idiot. He's the stupid
He was senator for whatever. Yeah. But he was one of his pawns.
Yeah.
And he was his campaign manager for the no. Yeah. And then, so they had the next day the interview in La Republica. Mm. And I remember reading in my office when I was at AMCHAM. And I was like, oh my God. And he said, yeah. We lied, and whenever anybody said anything, we absolutely connected it to a gay thing, or we turned it into, like, this is going to change the values of Colombia, and we turned it into a religious thing, and he was proud of the tactics he he implemented.
Yeah, I know. I met him.
And that was Facebook.
Yeah, it was Facebook-y type thing. Yeah.
So Russia's been overblown as a factor in the outcome of the most recent American election. And as compared to low voter turnout or pervasive vote buying that takes place here in Colombia, its impact here will be minimal as well.
This is true. This is true, buddy. Like you said, there are these games being played. I mean, you know, I think there might be a higher turnout this year just because of the polarization. I just think we'll see. Anyway, maybe we'll be back here in a few months discussing what didn't or did happen and
Great.
See how wrong we were.
We'd love to have you here and you have a drink with us.
Oh, yeah. Time. Well, I'm allowed to have a drink.
Yes.
So I'll have to have my wife sitting there saying, just
beautiful,
just
beautiful.
Now, let me just take this moment to say thank you to Chris Morfus and to Victoria Mulgannon. This is an amazing place in downtown Bogota. You want to sip some fine whiskey? This is a place to do it. I'm sure they've also got great cocktails and some both cheap whiskey too for the really really down at heel of us economically hard off journalists.
We have really good prices.
Victoria, how do we spell it?
It's like rebellion, but with R-E-V.
Yeah.
E-L-L-I-O-N.
Oh, it's rebellion.
You're right, but the name really quick. Is what you said, Revellon, which is celebrated in Brazil as like New Year's celebration.
Yeah.
And in French, it's celebration. And then Reve means to dream. We love the song by Joey Arroyo, La Revellon.
Yes. Richard, this has been a great pleasure. Let's talk bikes and buses one day.
Yeah, we'll have a bike and bus thing. We'll get some other people together and do bikes and buses and do further business stuff. But thank you again.
Thanks.
And yes, to my listeners, please, keep getting more feedback from you guys saying what you like, what you don't like. That's ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. And we're on the Facebook page. We're on Twitter. We're everywhere, you know, the social media evils that need to be. And of course, my Instagram is full of all this stuff, too. So again, keep tuning in, keep listening, keep sharing the shows. Thank you so much. It's just a one segment show today. This has been episode 225 of Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. And keep coming back. Thank you again to my guests, Chris and Victoria. That's us signing off for this week. Farewell. Bye-bye.